I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
I'm John DeSando.
This is Cinema Classics.
It is. Yay. Thank you.
The first live recording ever. There are very popular podcasts out there that record live with less people, I believe. So this is a great start. Thank you for coming. So we're talking about a week away from Valentine's Day, the great romantic comedies of all time. I have actually chosen great romantic comedies of all time. John has chosen lesser comedies. Romantic comedies of all time.
The deal is, my choices are popular choices. I offered to Johnny, who's putting everything together, the three films that I thought would be of popular interest. They're not my favorite, because I'm going to tell you what my favorite is. Do you want to know what my favorite romantic comedy of all time is?
Please, well, yes, of course we want to know. Everybody, they're waiting with bated breath, John.
Of course, everyone will agree with me. Breakfast at Tiffany's. No?
See, two people agreed with you. You think that's the greatest of all time?
No, it's my
favorite. It's not. It's your favorite. Okay. Racist, but all right. No, I love Breakfast at Tiffany's. That's great. So does anybody recognize what this image is from? What's that?
Come on, yell it out.
My wife.
What is it?
Manhattan. Right. That's Manhattan. Woody Allen's Manhattan. We're not going to be talking about Manhattan, but what we will talk about is Annie Hall.
Yeah.
This is the movie that kind of changed my life. I got dumped when I was 17 years old, and I saw this movie on television, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was not literally blowing my mind, metaphorically blowing my mind, and I couldn't believe that what I was seeing was like all my neuroses reflected back to me on screen, and I'd never seen anything quite like it.
Well, you know, this fulfills some of the requirements of the rom-com, in the sense that in a rom-com, usually there are two completely different people who look initially not to have anything in common or there for any chance to be romantic. And Woody Allen is the little nerd and Annie as the hip lady didn't seem right. But what it did for guys like me was recognize that you didn't have to be wealthy, charismatic. Right, so you could see. But what you had to be was smart. And I knew women were tuned into this. So Woody actually broke ground in the sense that he, and then people began to think, well, you know, you can be a nerd and you can still find an attractive woman. So that's in this essence of the rom-com.
What you begin to see here in Annie Hall is chemistry, right? Quirky chemistry. So they're both full of quirks. She is a wasp. He is a Jew. But they both come to the table with like a plate full of little quirks and idiosyncrasies and neuroses. And that's what I think is really wonderful about the movie. Now, the clip we're going to see, it's hard to narrow down, you know, one of your favorite movies, one of your life-changing movies, to a scene. This one is really great. It kind of comes in the middle. This is where Annie and Alvy have broken up already. They've broken up once. And she is missing him. And she calls him over to her apartment, ostensibly to kill a spider. But essentially what she's doing is just trying to reestablish a connection. And it's a really beautiful scene. So here it is.
What's me? Are you okay? What's the matter? Are you all right? What?
There's a spider in the bathroom.
What?
There's a big black spider in the bathroom.
That's what you got me here for at 3 o'clock in the morning? Because there's a spider in the bathroom?
Oh, my God. I mean, you know how I'm about insects. I can't sleep with a live thing crawling around in the bathroom.
Just kill it. For God, what's wrong with you? Don't you have a can of Raid in the house?
No.
I told you 1,000 times you should always keep a lot of insect spray. You never know who's going to crawl over.
I know. And a first aid kit and a fire extinguisher.
All right, give me a magazine, because I'm a little tired. You know, you joke with them about me, you make fun of me, but I'm prepared for anything, an emergency, a tidal wave, an earthquake. Hey, what is this? Did you go to a rock concert?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, really? Really? How'd you like it? Was it heavy? Did it achieve total heaviosity, or was it...
It was just great.
I got a wonderful idea. Why don't you get the guy that took you to the rock concert, we'll call him, and he can come over and kill the spider. You know,
I called you. You want to help me or not, huh?
What is this? Since when do you read the National Review? What are you turning into?
Well, I like to try to get all points of view.
Wonderful. Then why don't you get William F. Buckley to kill the spider?
Alvie, you're a little hostile. You know that? Not only that, you look thin and tired.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You got me out of bed. I ran over here. I couldn't get a taxi cab. You said it was an emergency. I ran up the stairs. Well, yeah, I was a lot more attractive when the evening began. Are you going with a right-wing rock and roll star?
Would you like a glass of chocolate milk?
Hey, what am I, your son? What do you mean? I came over for a...
I got the good chocolate.
Yeah, where's the spider? Is it in the bathroom? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hey, don't squish it, and after it's dead, flush it down the toilet, okay? And flush it a couple of times.
Darling, I've been killing spiders since I was 30, okay? It's a very big spider.
Yeah?
A lot of trouble. There's two of them.
Two?
Yep. I didn't think it was that big, but it's a major spider. You got a broom or something with
it's at your house. I think I left it there. I'm sorry.
Oh,
what are you doing? What are you doing?
Honey, there's a spider in your bathroom the size of a Buick.
Okay.
Hey. What is this? You got black soap?
It's for my complexion.
What are you joining a minstrel show? Don't worry. I did it. I killed them both. What's the matter? What are you sad about? Would you want me to do? Capture them and rehabilitate them?
Oh, don't go, okay, please.
What do you mean, don't go? What's the matter? What are you expecting, termites? What's the matter?
I don't know. I miss you.
Oh, Jesus, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Alvie?
What?
Was there somebody in your room when I called you?
What do you mean?
I mean, was there another... I thought I heard a voice.
No, I had the radio on.
Yeah?
I'm sorry, the television. I was watching the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. The punch on the pillow. That's what gets me. That beautiful sort of resignation, that defeat, and yet, you know... It results in them getting back together. And of course, this movie, a friend of mine I was talking to today about romantic comedies, and he said, can it be a romantic comedy if at the end they don't get together? And I said, well, that's a stupid question. Number one, that's stupid, of course. In this instance, they don't get together, and yet it is clearly a romantic comedy, but with a very bittersweet ending. You'll remember Woody Allen's great line about I can't remember the exact joke, but it's relationships are like eggs. You know, we need the eggs, right?
Well,
you know what I'm talking about.
What you're talking about is
stop upstaging me and just sit up?
What happens in 500 Days of Summer is that they don't get together. People think that the formula is rigid, and it is not.
Yeah.
And these are at least two good examples of that not working. So
So this is a beautiful example. Anybody have anything to say about Annie Hall or any questions?
Any romantic? Do you see any romantic elements here in the romantic comedy? Do you see any of the little bits that are put together usually for a romantic comedy? Now, these are oddball people, but...
Well, I think, you know, it's funny. I think we've lost a lot of the beauty here. The setup here is he shows up, right? And he keeps finding little clues of how she has behaved differently in their time apart. National Review, black soap, and it weighs on him. But what's interesting is that the scene plays out over the course of a few minutes, and the camera sort of follows them. There's not a lot of editing. There's not a lot of cutting, which I think you see a lot of today. So what happens is you see these two characters who we've established. Now, in this shot right here, you'll notice over his shoulder is some photographs from a scene we've seen earlier, which is the famous lobster scene where they're cooking lobsters together. So there's this nice little bit of continuity right there, right? Reminding us that these two people love each other, that they belong together, and that they're in a brief period of separation. Okay.
Yeah, what does anybody see anything here you want to comment on? Anything in the romantic comedy genre that you want to comment that you've seen? Yes. Go ahead, Kim. Yes, thank you.
Oh, I get to talk in a microphone. Well, thank you. The kind of the playful verbal sparring.
Yeah.
You know, that has that underbelly of playfulness, but lots of wit.
Well, and you have the long tradition back to the screwball comedies, back in the 30s when people needed reprieve from the Great Depression and so on. And so this kind of witty dialogue, though it's not as rapid as it was between Cary Grant and Russell in Girl Friday, you still have, right, you still have that witty, you know, exchange. Anything about the male in this? I think the male is prominent in the romantic comedy. Anybody see anything that's typical?
You know, I've noticed both the male and the female are both prominent in the romantic comedy. Great observation.
But here, in this one,
okay. So let's move on in the interest of time. No, we gotta keep going.
I know we
gotta
do.
Keep going.
Yeah.
All right. So John's pick here. Let me just see. Hold on. Sorry. Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Yeah, this really surprised me when I asked John, hey, can you send me a few of your favorite romantic comedies? This one was on the list. Can you tell us why?
I think that this captures all the silliness.
Besides just to annoy me.
Right, and all the silliness of romantic comedy with some pretty spectacular music. I realize it's common folk music, but it's pretty, pretty great stuff. Together with, you know, when Pierce Brosnan sings, you just got to roll your eyes and laugh.
I almost picked that scene, by the way.
Well, so nobody in this is taking themselves seriously. All these actors, including Meryl Streep, can't possibly be serious in this. And it seems to me that the romance is only peripheral to this. That what we're really interested in is figuring out who her father is, connecting with her mom. So that's why I selected it. I think it's an oddball romantic comedy. Most of people would think it's a musical. Anybody see it and have any thoughts about it? Yes.
Well, that would be bizarre because it is a musical.
Here you go. Oh. Yes, exactly. And so you saw it on Broadway? And there was, I heard that was pretty exciting.
Oh.
Right.
Wow, that's really great.
Oh, that's great. Even the color is goofy here. Everything
is
goofy.
Let's take a look at it. This is Meryl Streep singing Here We Go Again. Thank you.
always knew how to make an entrance.
Very cool. One, that is great because Meryl Streep is just unbridled, like, joy in that scene. And two, you don't always get to see women of her age in full shots of her body. She's just, like, enjoying herself and dancing. And it is really great, infectious scene.
Yeah. Anybody have any thoughts on that? Did you like that? Did anybody poo-poo that? What are your thoughts? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, what? Yeah, what?
I don't know. It doesn't do it for me.
No? Okay. Why not? Why not?
That's important.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't know. That's not one of the movies that I would,
Okay.
That I would take as being, that special.
Right. Neither would I, but
I agree.
So do you think it's fluffy?
Very much.
Yeah, it is fluffy.
And part of the value of this conversation is seeing in contrast greatness against not greatness. Yeah.
Summer, what? Oh, okay.
I think that one of the draws for that one for me, though, is the humanity involved. Like, it's not just saccharine. It's the reality that it's messy and there's various, forms of permanence that we bond with other people to.
Yes.
And not everyone is that polished, perfect beauty. It's about really all of their flaws and enjoying them.
You use a great word. It's messy, as most love is messy. And what I like about this film is it really goes beyond just the two young people, which are the usual formula is young people. Move it to the older people and move it into family. I mean, we're talking about, what happens in a family when you don't know who's the father and you da-da-da, and you got your mom you have to come to terms with. Yes, that's part of the thing that I love about it. It's just like my family. It's really messy, but endearing. And when you put those great songs in this, you can't help but at least be drawn in. And I don't blame you for thinking it's fluffy. What I do, and I think Johnny does it a lot, is I go wherever the director wants me to go. I don't sit there and say, this is just junk.
Well, I'd like you to sit down.
You would. I know. Do you think I'm doing this to annoy you?
Yes.
No.
Anyway. I know he is. I know he is.
But okay. Summer had something to say. Do you
yes.
Think we could get Kim, get over here. And yep.
I just think that wouldn't have been one of the films I picked either. However, that song with Meryl Streep, her singing it like that, it's like that, oh, fuck. Like, this is what I'm doing again. Like, this is the thing. This is the feeling that you feel when you're just enwrapped in this feeling, this emotion. And I thought that was captured really well. But what John said about, seeing I turned to Andrea and I said, this was not that. I mean, it was 10 years ago, but still, Meryl Streep's been around for a long time, and she's in adorable overalls, and she's playing this part that's like not typically played by an older woman. So
yes,
that's what I really liked.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. So this is one of my picks.
Yeah, let's hear how many people know this.
Yeah, probably no one will know this.
Right.
That's okay. This is called The Heartbreak Kid. It's from 1971. How many of you have heard of Nichols and May, the comedy team?
Elaine May. Mike Nichols.
Mike Nichols and Elaine May. They were a very successful comedy team in the 60s. They broke up, and Mike Nichols went on to direct The Graduate, which changed movies as we know it. The Graduate is one of John's favorite films.
And he also did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Yeah, right then, around the same time.
Yeah.
So Elaine May, first of all, Charles Grodin was up for the part of Benjamin Braddock in The Graduate. And I can't remember why he didn't get it. Either he turned it down or Mike Nichols decided against him. But Elaine May was launching her film debut as a solo filmmaker. and it was The Heartbreak Kid. The movie is uniquely, in its tone, it is a unique film. You'll see a lot of, in Charles Grodin, what I think becomes a staple of the 80s comedy hero. Charming, fast-talking, a loser, but he's so good at like convincing you that he knows what he's talking about that he ends up gaining a little traction. I'm thinking of characters like Michael Keaton in Night Shift and Bill Murray in Stripes. I think they're rooted in Charles Grodin's character in The Heartbreak Kid. The movie is dark. The premise is this guy falls in love with this Jewish girl, whirlwind romance. They get married, and within the span of a trip, a driving trip to Miami, he realizes maybe this was a mistake. What I found here, so you'll forgive me, is I found the entire movie available for free on YouTube. I encourage you to watch this movie. It is one of the great romantic comedies. Ben Stiller remade it shittily, about 10 years ago. Avoid that one and watch this one. Now, let me try to find, I'll find this. Whoops, sorry about that. So what happens in the movie is they get married. And it's Elaine May's daughter, by the way, that's playing opposite Charles Grodin. They get to Miami. He falls in love with Sybil Shepherd, like that. And then all he can think about is getting out of the marriage. So there's this really great scene where he tries to break up with her in a restaurant. And, this is it.
Go on, Lenny. What were you gonna say?
No, I was just gonna say that when I was sitting out on the hot courtroom steps this afternoon, I was thinking that in 3 weeks you're gonna be 22 years old.
12.
Right. And the really fantastic thing about being 22 years old is that you have your whole life in front of you.
I know, we both have.
And, I mean, the people you could meet, the places you could go, the things that you could do, it's just...
Lenny, I never thought that I'd get to Florida.
That's right. I mean, what some women would not give to be 22 years old, it's just a...
That's right, I know it.
To go when you want, to do, to live. Do you know what I mean?
To live. Is that what you mean, Lenny?
We only pass through once, right? I mean, we can't squander it. No matter what happens, we just passing this way but one time. We can't squander it.
Once is a lot. Once is a whole lifetime.
That's why we have to use and learn from anything that happens. We have to learn from the good, from the bad, from the happiness, from the tragic. We have to learn. We have to use it all. Just use it all.
You're so deep, Lenny. I never knew that you were so deep.
Do you sense at all what I'm trying to say? Oh, Christ, it's so hot in here. Is it hot in here or is it hot in here?
What? I don't understand. What are you trying to tell me? No, I mean, I'm getting nervous.
I'm trying to say. We have to prepare ourselves. We have to prepare ourselves for anything, you know? I mean, everything could be terrific. The world could be singing. And then suddenly for no reason at all, it's over. It's over, Lila.
Oh my God, Lenny. I think I know what you're trying to tell me.
Look, I didn't want it to happen. I didn't plan it. You're good. You're good. You deserve better than me. You deserve much better than me. I didn't want it to happen. I didn't plan anything like this.
Oh, Lenny. Oh my God, Lenny. Oh, Lenny, you're dying. Oh, Lenny, you've got something and you never told me. Oh, Lenny.
I'm not dying. Who said anything about dying? I want out of the marriage. I want out of the goddamn marriage.
I'm gonna throw up.
Listen to me. We're not right for each other. It didn't work out. I tried to tell you as far back as Virginia, but you couldn't see it. You were too busy yelling pee-pee every 2 minutes.
Let me get to the bathroom, please.
No. Listen.
I'll stop it there. This scene goes on. It's painful. It's comic and painful. The movie is very funny, but it is hinged on this notion that this guy is so in love with love that he falls in love with this woman and then breaks her heart and then proceeds to try to romance Sybil Shepherd. It's a very charming performance. You can hear Charles Grodin's Pittsburgh accent in the movie.
So what's funny about this? Why is this a romantic comedy? I mean, this scene is so dark. And you're calling this a romantic comedy?
Yeah, well, you got to see the rest of the movie.
Well, all right, but what's comedic about this? Anybody? Help me out, because I'm being really negative. Can you find anything funny in this? Anybody?
I just thought there was an element of humor in the way he was presenting the story. He was so roundabout about it and the fact that you came to the wrong conclusion. I mean, there is an element of comedy there, I think.
Oh, and I think you're so right. He fulfills our expectation of a male who just is completely inept.
How many people have seen this movie?
Nobody.
None. How many people have heard of it? One. I really encourage you to see this movie. I am giving you a gift, and it's free on YouTube because no one fucking knows it.
I think one of the comedic elements of this is the young woman, which is a kind of reverse role. Usually the male is completely out of it, and she just doesn't.
But he is out of it.
Well, yeah.
He is out of it.
But usually the female is not as out of it as she is. She's just really naive about what's going on here. That's why I kind of like this movie, because it goes against some of our expectations.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. He's a super charming romantic comedy lead, and yet he's doing something really painful and really awful. You start to see hints of it on their honeymoon trip, where they're singing in the car together and he can't stand her singing voice. And then they stop for egg salad sandwiches at a diner, and she's eating it, and she's got like egg salad in her mouth, and he can't stand it. And it's really, I forget her name right now, which is doing a huge disservice to one of the great romantic comedy performances, but Elaine May's daughter is brilliant in this movie. She really gets right to your heart. She's very sweet. She's cute. And she's skewered. She's just sacrificed in a really painful way. And Sybil Shepherd is this sort of wasp ideal that Charles Grodin is in pursuit of. You want him to succeed, but at the cost of breaking this girl's heart. It's hard, but it's a beautiful movie. This is another one of John's picks.
What'd you know?
Crazy Rich Asians. I'm not saying it's not great. I just have not seen it. So, John, preface what we're
going to say. Well, I'd like to ask the audience, anybody seen it? And anybody want? Yes. So, Carla, would you support my choice? Why?
I think it's fun. It's funny. You can see, again, the messiness between she and her boyfriend, she and her friends and the boyfriend and the other men in the movie. I mean, it's a laundry list of messiness. And then it's, you know, they fall in love, they have issues, they're split apart, they're brought back together. I mean, it's your cliche romantic comedy.
Yeah, you know, and you know, it's very similar to It Happened One Night with Clark Gable and Irene Dunne, I think, is the lady.
Claudette Colbert.
Claudette Colbert. I mean, she's...
By the way, you were alive for that.
Hmm?
You were... He was alive during that time, and I to give him the answers.
So, but you're talking about the issues about this. The class issues are incredibly important, and in this film... Although both of them appear to be professors from Columbia, he's obviously in the super rich cat, and he doesn't let her know. He comes from a family that is beyond belief for its wealth. I mean, there's $40 million for a wedding. So
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. They it costs $40
million. $40
million? $40
million. Well, I'm glad you said that, because the scene that I picked without guidance from you was the wedding scene.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at that. Yeah. Whoops. Holy mackerel.
So take my hand, take my whole life too, for I can't help falling in love with you.
That's gorgeous. That's beautiful. I particularly love the shot, the first shot of the water kind of coming towards us and the camera pulling back. I don't know anything about this movie.
I think it has all the issues that we see in romantic comedies, including the complicating factor of the difference in wealth and class of the two principals, the intrusions of the parents and the grandparents into the process, the juxtaposing with the carefree friend who runs the bachelor party, I think, for him. It has all of the elements that seem to make it appear that they would never come together again. But obviously, the culmination of that is this wedding using a pop song, and we've seen that. We saw that with ABBA. We see that here. It works for me, and it seems to erase all of the difficulties. And anybody here who has been married or engaged or been in a long-term relationship knows that there are these issues that are always coming up that you have to fight against. And Hollywood, which the Asians have mimicked perfectly, can make everything right.
What's really interesting about the scene, and like I said, I think it's important to know that I have not seen the movie because I'm still moved by this scene. And what I gather from this scene is that the beauty in it comes not from the bride and groom coming together, but from the longing glances of this girl and one of the groomsmen, that that's the love that we're connecting with there and not the ones being featured by the wedding. It's an interesting twist because in most films, and a lot of romantic comedies have wedding scenes. Some of them are predicated solely on the wedding, My Best Friend's Wedding, for instance. But in this instance, we're not focused on the bride and groom. We're focused on the actual the lovers there. It's great.
I like Mamma Mia. This is pure Hollywood type of fantasy. But it's so appealing, and it keeps coming. Johnny and I were talking about this before. It keeps coming back and back. This is a very strong genre. Why does it come? We know. We know what's going to happen. We know they're going to end up getting married. But all of us, I believe what they hit is almost like a heavy-duty film. They hit on all those little tropes in our lives that everybody has gone through, all the blocks to romance, to wedding, and so on. And when they overcome, as these two do, and I think you're absolutely right, these two principles are incredibly beautiful, but it is much more than that. It is so much of everything that's going on around it, particularly with family and friends. And yeah.
Well, it's interesting because you hit on there are only two possible endings to a romantic comedy. The couple either gets together or they don't. But what's really fascinating is how many permutations you can get out of either one of those final scenarios. There's bittersweet endings, there are happy endings, and many different variations in between. So our next movie...
Do you want to do just one more?
No, we got Arthur.
Well, we don't have to.
Well, what do you mean we don't have to?
We have to, since we're supposed to be done at 8:30.
Yeah, it's 8:19. You just... Chill yourself before you kill yourself.
He can't wait to get to Arthur. You know,
yeah,
you
listen,
know that, don't you?
I have a very short scene from Arthur. It's very hard, actually, to find a great scene in its entirety on YouTube of Arthur, which is not only one of the great romantic comedies of all time, one of the great comedies of all time. If you haven't seen Arthur recently, I encourage you to revisit it. It is exactly as funny, if not funnier, than you originally remembered it. I love it because alcoholism is a superpower in this movie.
Yes, it is in A Star Is Born.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about a superpower that makes you piss yourself on the stage at the Grammys.
I think it does.
But... this movie, Arthur is very charming when he's sober and 10 times as charming when he's drunk. I think the movie is really beautiful for that because it doesn't, We don't have to get into any messaging about alcoholism. Who cares? I don't even know if it's a metaphor for him being a man child or not. It doesn't matter to me. What matters is Dudley Moore's performance. The scene I'm going to show you is very short. It actually is not very romantic at all, but I just think it's brilliantly funny. It's the scene where he has to go meet the father of the girl he does not want to marry.
See, now, if I did this, he'd be all over me. It has nothing to do with romance.
And yet everything.
Hello, Arthur.
Hello, Mr. Johnson.
I haven't seen much of you lately.
Ah. Well, the reason you haven't seen much of me is because I normally pick Susan up at her apartment in town, and you live here. Want a drink?
I never drink.
Ah.
And no one in my family ever drinks.
That's great. You probably never run out of ice your whole life.
I don't drink because drinking affects your decision making.
You may be right. I can't decide. That's just a little humor. Where's the rest of this mousse?
Arthur, I think it's time we got to know one another.
I do too. That's why I had you come over today. This is a tough room. I don't have to tell you that. You must have hated this mousse.
Why don't you forget the mousse for a moment?
Right.
I don't know, man. Where's the rest of this mousse is just a great metaphor for everything. Everything you don't understand.
What was the adjective you used? Charming? Charming?
Yeah.
I would use the adjective annoying.
Okay, well, where's the rest of your mousse? That's stupid. I want you to go away now.
Yeah, you will. In about 5 minutes, yeah. I'm gone.
Okay.
But anyway, that was a funny scene. You're right.
Anyway, it's a beautiful movie.
But very much like Bradley Cooper in A Star is Born, I get 5 minutes of a drunken and I've had enough. You know, please, let's get on with
you're
it.
You're right, okay.
Okay, but okay. I realize it's the core of this
And yet you hang out with me all the time.
I am,
so.
Right.
Yeah. Contradiction.
It's limited.
Exactly, which is why we usually only spend 5 minutes together. Never came together until just now. I put it together. Okay, this is your last and best pick, Pretty Woman.
Am I
in
wrong?
Deference to John, which the word deference in me in relation to him is not a common thing. But in deference to John and my wife, I picked two scenes from Pretty Woman. So one is this short breakfast scene.
So what do you do?
I buy companies.
What kind of companies?
I buy companies that are in financial difficulty.
If they have problems, you must get them for a bargain, huh?
Well, the company I'm buying this week, I'm getting for the bargain price of about $1
billion. $1 billion?
Yes.
Wow. You must be really smart, huh? I only got through 11th grade. How far did you go in school?
I went all the way.
Your folks must be really proud, huh?
Now, that juxtaposed with this scene later in the movie where they're saying goodbye. So I think what's interesting is to watch the difference between Julia Roberts in this almost sort of childlike wonder that she's experiencing this joy and this scene.
Why are you leaving now?
Edward, there'll always be some guy, even some friend of yours, thinking he can treat me like Stucky, thinking that it's allowed. What are you gonna do? You gonna beat up everybody?
That's not why you're leaving.
Look, You made me a really nice offer. And a few months ago, no problem, but now everything is different and you changed that and you can't change back. I want more.
I know about wanting more. I invented the concept. The question is how much more?
I want the fairy tale.
Impossible relationships. My special gift is impossible relationships. Thank you.
You're welcome.
If you ever need anything, dental floss, whatever, you give me a call.
I had a good time.
Me too. Let me get you a Belvoir.
No, I got it.
I'll carry this.
Thanks.
Stay the night with me. Not because I'm paying you, but because you want to.
I can't.
Goodbye.
I think you have a lot of special gifts.
It's really great. Him closing the door and saying stay is kind of like Annie Hall punching the pillow and saying I miss you.
And we see in the rom-com, it thrives on the complications. And class always seems, or wealth always seems to be a defining factor in these, to test the true love of anyone. Then you roll that together with Cinderella, Pygmalion, you know, My Fair Lady, and you know, you have the transformation of the female, which of course has to, the Me Too movement has to hate this kind of film. But it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago, this was the way it went. The man was always superior. The man was the transforming agent. But in that, the woman still had the romantic sensibility that the man missed. The man is still obstinate.
But it's interesting you say that, because in this particular instance, this was a star-making role for Julia Roberts, and there were so many great moments that she had that transcend cultural sort of context, that transcend the narrative. She is in complete power here in some ways, despite the narrative positing her as a whore. You saw the change in her from the pancake-eating child to the person who's in control here. It's a really fascinating kind of transformation, and one that made her one of the highest paid actresses in the world for a decade or more.
Hey, let's hear. Anybody have any? Somebody must have thoughts on this film.
I love Princess Vivian. I said I love Princess Vivian.
Princess Vivian, yeah.
Princess Vivian,
that's
Princess
right.
Vivian.
She's a princess.
Well, that's what he said when he was coming for her.
Oh, mm-hmm. You're right, yeah.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Anybody? Anybody else?
You know, one of my favorites, the chemistry between them,
yes,
was so good.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that he was so controlled and she was so uninhibited, it just, you know, she brought fun to his life.
Yes.
Whereas he had no fun. You know, it just showed that, you know, she was genuinely a good person in a bad situation, you know, and and they always remain.
Pardon me?
Right, and it was nice to see that, you know, they remained friends even when they thought they were going to be breaking up. There was still like good feelings between them, which yeah. you know, which was really a nice thing. It was a great movie. I like the scene where she walks into the bar and she's all dressed up and she looks gorgeous and he turns around. That's like, that's my favorite, one of my yeah. favorite scenes.
There's so many. It was hard to pick what scene to focus on.
But you're right. There's so much here. That expresses the universal experience that we have in love. And frequently, it's very opposite, and particularly in romances like this, in romantic comedies, they're completely different people. But they are attracted through, you know, through everything that happens to them, they are still attractive. And you implied something that I believe firmly in. The choice of the right actors makes a big difference.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, so you look at this movie and it's about a prostitute who looks like Julia Roberts. Okay. And a rich guy that looks like Richard Gere. And they get together. And, but it's not about that at all. And no romantic comedy is about what's on the surface. It's not about that. It's not about a prostitute falling in love with a rich guy and a rich guy falling in love with her. It's about people. And how we relate to those people. And romantic comedies are probably Hollywood's biggest, most successful ace up its sleeve, right? Because we all know what this is like. We all know the joy of falling in love, the pain of losing that love, the incredible high of finding it again. And that's what these movies are about, right? They're tuned in to the one thing we all have in common. It doesn't matter if you're gay, straight, trans, you don't have a gender, whatever. It doesn't matter. You experience love as a human being, and these movies are tapped into that. And you can strip away all the narrative gloss and all the little specific trappings of who these characters are, and at the heart of it is this one experience that we keep going through time and time again. That has been our first live recording of Cinema Classics. We appreciate it. Thank you. Let's all head out into the lounge one more time. We're going to pull the winners of, or do you want to do it right now? Oh, let's do it right now.
There should be a prize for everyone.
I didn't get to, by the way, I wanted to talk about The Awful Truth. We didn't talk about classic screwball romance. But if you get a chance and you want to explore some classic film, The Awful Truth with Cary Grant and Irene Dunne is one of the greats.
Right.
John, you want to go ahead and...
I was just going to say that also Philadelphia Story is one that I really like.
Yeah, that one's great too, with Jimmy Stewart and Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn.
And Ralph Bellamy, right?
He's not in it, but that's okay. Why don't you just pull the ticket?
All right.
Ticket number one. That's funny. Gretchen? Yeah, congratulations, Gretchen. Package number one. Okay, very cool. And package number two goes to Andrea.
Oh,
very
now
nice.
Now that's a setup.
Andrea Saunders. Congratulations. Thank you all again. If we do this again, we hope that you'll join us.
Yes, wonderful to see you.
Did you have a good time?
Oh, great. Thank
you. Good. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Happy Valentine's Day. God bless and drive safe.
Yep.
Support for Cinema Classics comes from Film Columbus, enriching our community to make Columbus a destination for film education, exhibition, and production. Learn more at filmcolumbus.com. Cinema Classics is produced by John DeSando and Johnny DiLoretto. Listen to shows every Thursday at 8:01 p.m. and full shows online at wcbe.org.